All right, Shisha. So I have been talking to you about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormonal levels, with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide, with 98% of them saying they would recommend it to somebody else. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their probiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings. It helps you feel satisfied longer, boost your energy. It helps to relieve occasional gas and bloating, reduce sugar cravings, keeps you feeling satisfied longer, boost your energy, and helps you stabilize those damn mood swings. And because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. And so I struggle with brain fog. I'm sure many of y'all can relate. And since I've been taking the prebiotic collagen protein, I've noticed a big difference there, as well as just a lift in my overall energy levels. Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows, folks. So right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order today with code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That is happymammoth.com. Use code ADULTCHILD to get 15% off today. All right, Chichos, did you know that scientists now openly say that your gut is the cornerstone of your health? And it's not just about digestion, okay? The gut literally affects everything from your energy levels to mood to weight management and even your longevity. However, an imbalanced microbiome can sneakily sabotage you with constant bloating, sluggish energy, and those stubborn extra pounds that you just can't lose no matter what. But here's the kicker. Fixing your gut bacteria isn't rocket science. It is the game changer for reclaiming your vibe and living your best damn life. And that is where Bioma steps in, delivering powerhouse supplements like their flagship probiotics for killer digestion and weight control, the Feminine Health Symbiote to keep things balanced down there, and menopause support to crush hot flashes and mood swings. Their science-backed trio of prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics work like a gut reset button, all in vegan, tasteless capsules with a no BS 14-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it risk-free, okay? So go to gobioma.com/adultchild today for an extra 15% off your order. That is gobioma.com/adultchild and get an extra 15% off. You can have a full life on paper and still feel like a ghost in every room you walk into. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. What you're holding on to, just let it all go. What's making you slow now, just let it all go. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm an adult child of an alcoholic and dysfunctional family, and I am the captain of this hot mess of a ship. This is where we talk about what to do when you realize that your childhood screwed you up a whole hell of a lot more than you initially thought that it did. We curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. So first things first, I am super excited to announce the next round of Breathe to Heal. So this is going to be a 7-week breathwork course that will be kicking off on Tuesday, January 13th. So we're doing it on a Tuesday this time instead of a Wednesday. So hopefully that'll, for some of you folks who Wednesdays weren't an option, hopefully Tuesdays are. And so our first time that we did this, we focused on functional freeze. This last time was on inner child healing. And this time we are calling this Breathe to Heal, Release and Receive. And so this is all about releasing everything that is holding you back, the beliefs, the baggage, the old roles, the stuck energy, the trauma stuck in your body, so you can make space for all the good, the peace, the safety, the self-worth, the abundance that you want to call in. And with this being the beginning of the year, this starting in the beginning of the year, I couldn't think of a better theme. So this is facilitated by fellow Shit Show member and certified breathwork practitioner, Teresa, who actually just finished her second breathwork certification. So I'm excited to see what kind of new shit she's going to be bringing to the table.
And we are combining parts work, somatic practices, and breath work. And no, you don't have to have any experience in any of these things in order to participate and get the most out of this. This is perfect for anybody who has yet to dip their toe into the somatic part of this healing journey. This is perfect for anybody who's stuck in functional freeze. This is perfect for anybody who's wanting to deepen their healing journey. This is for anybody who is looking to participate in a healing course where it's not stuffy, where you don't have to be afraid about asking the stupid questions, where you can just show up exactly as you are, even if that's a total and complete shit show, and you will be completely accepted as this is being housed within the shit show community. So it really just creates a really authentic, come as you are and just safe and comfortable vibe. This is perfect for anybody who's trying to start this new year off on the right foot. And boy, am I. Boy, am I. So I'm currently working on fixing up the website. So I should have that done in a few days. So this will be going on sale, and there will be a sale on Black Friday, but I'll have the website up and running so that you can see all the details on the course. So stay tuned, subscribe to my newsletter if you want the announcement for that. And I'll also be announcing it on the podcast, but I'm super, super pumped for this. Breathe to heal, release and receive January 13th shit shows. Okay. So today we are diving deep with the one and only crappy childhood fairy, Miss Anna Runkle, who is here to discuss her new book. Well, I guess it's not brand new. It's been about a month and a half. It is called Connectability. Heal the hidden ways you isolate, find your people, and feel at last like you belong. And so this is basically her field guide for those of us with complex trauma who feel disconnected. She breaks down why relationships feel so hard and gives you a ton of practical tools, prompts, daily ways that you can connect to help heal trauma-driven isolation and avoidance, and to help you actually find and keep your people. And so we are going to be diving into what she has deemed as the connection wound, which is something that I know so many of us relate to, struggle with. For crying out loud, the very first laundry list trait is we became isolated and afraid of people. So this can show up as physical isolation. Pete Walker, in his book Complex PTSD, he refers to this as the camouflage response. So isolating, hiding, avoiding human interaction at all costs. But what's much more common is this showing up as emotional isolation. So we're out there, we're living our lives, we go to work, we see people, we might even like look social from the outside, but inside we are alone, we feel alone. There's that emotional isolation. This is about keeping people at a distance, not because we want to be alone, but because letting someone in feels scary as hell. Even though we might crave connection more than anything, there is a part of us that says, if I let you see the real me, you'll hurt me, or you'll leave me, or you'll use it against me. For me, the way that this showed up was I was convinced that once you got to know me, that you would decide you didn't like me. So I was constantly like bracing for impact, just waiting for that moment to happen. And so however our fear shows up or whatever the stories are in our head, we stay guarded. We give just enough to pass as open. We have these surface level relationships. We perform connection instead of actually feeling it. You know, we have become masters at showing people the version of us that we think is safe to be seen, but never the one that's actually real. Because if you grew up in a home where connection was inconsistent or dangerous or just not available, your nervous system decided that closeness equals threat. And your brain might say, I want intimacy, but your body says, absolutely the fuck not. So we are going to be diving deep into this connection room this connection wound with Anna, with the crappy childhood fairy. So let's get on with the damn show. But first, let's talk about how you, yes, you, yeah, I switched it up there, how you can address your connection wound by Damn in the Joint Shit Show, my online support community where we have a minimum of 6 weekly Zoom support groups where you can connect with other fellow shit shows who are doing the damn work to heal. This is a support system at your fingertips, in your back top pocket, available to you 24/7 through our app. You can also access it on the web. We have a ton of different subgroups within the shit show community that are dedicated to particular interests or struggles, like shit show parenting, childhood sexual abuse survivors, neurodivergent issues, employment struggle sesh, healing from narcissists, shit show dudes, shit show hormones are whack, food struggles, you name it, we got it. So you, yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever, how about we do it today? How about today's the damn day for less than $1 a day? This is relational trauma, folks. We heal relational trauma through safe relationships. This is the place where you can do so. You can just quit after a month if you don't like it, okay? It's the holidays. This is the perfect time for you to be surrounded, have access to people who get it, okay? So see the link in the show notes, or you can go to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow. Next, give me a follow on Insta and TikTok at adultchildpod. Last but not least, whatever you do, please, please, please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Thank you. Love you all.
Well, she's back. The woman, the myth, the legend, just popping out books like it ain't no thing.
I know.
One a year.
Yeah.
It ain't no thing.
Yeah.
Connectability. You know what I read the subtitle, Heal the Hidden Ways You Isolate, Find Your People, and Feel. And then it says in parentheses, at last, but I initially read at least.
At least like you belong.
Yeah, at least. At least. Bare min.
You might feel like a real loser. No.
It's really good.
This is the book from my hard-won experience, not fitting in ever, and learning how to have a great group of friends and social life and feel my way through bizarre situations that continue yes. to confront me in my life.
Getting weird. Getting weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, to begin with, I'm very weird, but stuff gets weird when you're there. Like, I'm on podcasts. Sometimes podcasts go sideways and you have to find your way to, you know, to safety and lucidity with them. And I've just, it's been this like great phase of my life since I learned how to be connectable, that I can, like, I go to New York, I ride the subway, next thing you know, I'm talking to somebody. I feel really comfortable. I trust my red flag detector. I know how to have a boundary and get myself out of a situation that does get weird. And I don't know, it's just like a new life, really, to start to be able to connect with people.
That's when I feel the most connected to the world and my higher power, is when I have those divinely inspired interactions with strangers. Oh, yeah. Where it's like obvious that your paths were supposed to cross.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to be such a misanthrope. People were so stressful for me to be around, and I generally assumed they were against me. And sometimes they were, because I was difficult when my complex PTSD symptoms were sort of running my life. But I had trouble like interpreting where people were coming from, or if they were sort of pulling away from me, what did it mean? Was it 'cause of me? And it was so overwhelming, I would just have to avoid people. And I had ways of faking my way through things. So now I've given that a word. And it's really cool, because on my YouTube channel, so many people are resonating with it. I call it covert avoidance, where—
Yeah, I want to get there.
You do the things, hang out with people. You might even have a partner, you know, you have a job that has people at it. You try to act appropriate, but every chance you get, you're withdrawing on some level. Even if it's just like, I'm too busy. Oh, I'm just tired after work, can't deal. And then you do it to people who really matter. Like, I have kids and they're adults now, but when they were little, I was like, wow, you really got to be present for these guys. You got to really be there. And especially when I became a single mom. And so learning, actually, having kids was a growth experience for me, to learn how to just like really love and be present with people and start building from there. And when you have kids, you have to have boundaries. You cannot let bad people in your life. And I made some early mistakes in that department. So this book is about the stuff that gets in the way of being able to connect, starting with the trauma wound, growing up with trauma.
Well, so that's where I wanted to start, was with love how you frame it as a connection wound.
Yeah.
And I think in a way you could say that that's what complex trauma is, like at its core.
Yeah.
Is it's a connection wound.
Injury. Yeah.
And I'm curious, Like, what was your process? I mean, obviously you had the insight and the aha moment that like what's going on is I have complex PTSD, but what was the journey for you in coming to terms with that this was a connection wound that you had?
I honestly had no idea that my connection wound was trauma related exactly. I mean, the whole concept of complex PTSD only came onto my radar screen in 2014, even though I used to be a video producer and I worked on mental health videos and they would talk about like the ACE study and stuff. I knew about that. But when I heard about complex PTSD, this kind of PTSD that affects people who went through chronic, intense trauma, I mean, your audience knows, I don't need to preach to the choir here, but I just was like, oh my God, that is what I have. And the thing that I have is like, so I'm just like such a textbook case of CPTSD. And eventually, you know, talk to a therapist. I said, I think I have this. They were like, oh yeah, that's what you have. So that is it. I just had all the classic symptoms, but I was trying to get help for it starting in the 90s. And they just really like, even after I was attacked on the street, you know, that was the thing that precipitated.
I remember that.
Yeah, me having to find out what was wrong or get some help of some kind. I wasn't able to just wing it on my own. I was about 30 and I got randomly attacked on the street and beaten unconscious. Mm. And I had a head injury and I had PTSD, but literally not my doctor and therapist did not discuss PTSD with me. They treated it like the doctor looked at, did a brain scan. And if my brain wasn't bleeding, he was satisfied that I was fine. And the therapist was like, let's just talk about this 3 times a week, you know, till the cows come home. And then
re-traumatizing.
It was so re-traumatizing. And I didn't even have a frame to understand why I would melt down in every session. Mm-hmm. It's not better. How I interpreted it was the way a traumatized kid does, which is like, this is my fault. There's something so wrong with me that I'm a burden on the therapy system. You know, they can't help me. I'm unhelpable. And I went to a very bad place. And then I just discovered, so, you know, a friend showed me some very simple techniques that she had used to get sober. And sobriety wasn't my issue. It was all the PTSD, all the just like noise in my head. I couldn't focus. I was just like freaked out all the time. I would just say shit. And she showed me how to just get my stress thoughts, my fearful and resentful thoughts and feelings on paper, ask a higher power to remove them. And it was, you know, this thing, we called it the daily steps. I probably told you about this before that there's a group of people in AA who were doing this and I clung to them like a life raft. They saved me.
We had an awkward moment in our very first interview because I told you that I had heard about these people and that like I'd heard they were kind of like a cult.
Well, I think in AA, my husband was sort of part of a 12-step world that was very effective. It was very structured. And basically, I think people who are unhappy in AA are always going to call people who are successful and happy in AA names. You know, it's just human. So I don't care. You go with the people who are still alive and who are functioning and having a life. And I don't care what you call them. I thought about, let's digress. Let's talk about cults a minute. Cults fascinate me because
me too.
Traumatized people are so vulnerable to get sucked into them. And what's lovely about them is they have a ton of structure. Mm-hmm. You know, they just tell you, like, sometimes it's just like, just tell me what to do. And they keep you accountable to keep doing whatever it is you're supposed to do to be the sort of person the cult is asking you to be. So if they're asking you, in the case of AAs, to be sober and to keep coming to meetings and to keep working with somebody else on this and to do the steps, I don't see the problem. I think there's a time and a place for it. But when it turns into, I'm from Northern California. And so it's shocking how often anything cultish, and so many things can be a cult, right? It's like correct eating or, you know, a special form of education or something for kids.
Dysfunctional families, I think, are very representative.
Yes, they are. You must not betray or, you know, some of
have your roles that you're in to define roles.
Yeah. So some definitions of a toxic cult to me are, if you make noises about leaving, you'll be punished and ostracized and people will talk bad about you and tell everybody not to be your friend. You're pressured not to hang out with people who are not in the cult.
Yeah.
Right? And then the old standby, the leader is going to sleep with all the young women, you know, that's like, that always ends up.
They'll ruin your life if you want to leave.
Yeah. That's like extreme cultism that we've seen in Netflix documentaries, but Nobody in AA does that. But
No, I didn't mean AA.
yeah.
I'm in
Yeah.
AA. I meant like there was like a little group of people that had this method. And
Yeah.
I said the name that I had heard that I can't even remember what they were
Yeah.
called, but they
It's
had
called
like.
Fellowship of the Spirit. So they saved my life. And yeah, and sometimes I did encounter that a little bit where people would be like, oh, they're a cult. But they're not. They're not at all. You're allowed to leave. I have left, you know. It's like and we're still all friends, so it's fine. But that's something I think all of us, when we start to, this is actually a really good example of how when you make a radical positive transformation in your life, a lot of your former associates will put negative pressure on you not to change. It feels threatening to people. And like basically everything really positive and admirable I've ever done has had some backlash. All the way down to, you know, having a YouTube channel with a lot of followers, you know, there'll always be the haters. There's always that. So for me, a lot of healing has involved, I think this is very underrated as a aspect of trauma healing that is essential. It's like you recover your own personal sovereignty. You no longer make somebody else your higher power, whether it's a sponsor, a therapist. Now you need to do that for a phase, perhaps, you know, when you are at sea, you know, you're in danger. And so you make somebody else your higher power, but then you graduate from it. Did you ever see the movie? I love this movie, The Master by Paul Thomas Anderson. It's got Philip Seymour
Yes,
Hoffman
yes, yes,
and
yes, yes.
Paul
It's supposed to
Anthony.
be like representative of like Scientology in a way.
Yeah. I think that is such a great film. So underrated. I mean, it's not rated poorly, but I think it's a masterful
Yeah,
film.
it's yes, right up
And
my
what it
alley.
just what it describes, the Joaquin Phoenix character, you know, he's like a wreck with PTSD, and he bumps into this cult. And it helps him so much. And then there comes the day where he rides off on the motorcycle. He's got his own life now. And I think that is like the arc of human healing. It's beautifully described. And I think if more people understood it on the level that I've had to live it, they would realize this movie like is so good. This is such a good movie. And it really shows that nuance of how you can be so messed up and need somebody to just tell you what to do. And
That's
then
so
comes a
true.
time, yeah, when they're not your master anymore. So that's my digression.
Did your connection wound show up differently in friendships versus romantic relationships?
Oh, hell yeah, it did. But there, yeah, there were kind of, maybe as I get older, I'll see more of the similarities. But for me, romantic relationships always represented the promise that I would have something like a family again, and the idea of getting married and maybe having kids. And even just having a steady boyfriend. And I did in my 20s, I had a steady boyfriend, and it was I who ended it in the end. And not because it was so terrible, but because I was sort of falling apart and I couldn't sort of hang with it anymore. But I had a nice boyfriend for years, and it was so strengthening to me. My whole life was so much better for having a partner, you know, for not having to be alone all the time, or I don't know, kind of driven to have to hang out with people I didn't like just so I had anybody to hang out with. I have a lot of good things to say about a healthy relationship. It's very healing to have one. I would like everybody to have one if that's what they want. But the connection wound makes it hard. And in romance, it can turn into this whole, I think we parentify partners sometimes. And I do feel like I can speak for many of us, if not all of us, but where that unmet need for just unconditional love comes out as this demand on other people, like, fix me, I'm feeling upset right now. I feel triggered by how you're not paying attention to me, and I need you to like change how I feel right now. That was my sort of like basic setting in relationships when I was younger, and it doesn't work. And anybody healthy gets pushed away by that, and you get stuck with the people who are either, you know, too checked out to care what you're doing, or who are so codependent that they will try to fix you, which is not sexy. And then you're in this dilemma, aren't you? But but it's this it's parentification of the partner. And a lot of my learning about like how to be in a relationship had to evolve of like realizing this is another a person. If you're trying to fit them into this little prototype you have in your mind, you're objectifying them. And that dating can be a way to get to know people. It's so easy in today's hookup culture. Yeah.
Instead of deciding that they're your soulmate after two dates and to stop collecting information about
There's
them.
that. And then that's because, I mean, attraction, it's very confusing. It feels like soulmateness, right? But it's physical attraction. But also, because in contemporary hookup culture, you're supposed to be okay with having sex and having sex a bunch of times and then later possibly, oh, so, you know, maybe a relationship forms, but you can't expect it. You can't ask for it. You're supposed to be just totally fine with it. Like, to parallel something that is said in the Big Book of AA, where it says, what is it? Anger is the dubious luxury of normal men. I say casual sex is the dubious luxury of non-traumatized people. And it's not casual.
No kidding.
It activates your whole attachment mechanism, which isn't just like a legacy of trauma. It's like nature's beautiful creation that makes you form families and create life. And it's a very special thing that's happening. But like all of our great capacities, trauma can twist it a little bit into this slightly wrong thing that takes you down a very bad path. And I would say my life, you know, I put so much work into being a good person and accomplishing things, and I would be foiled again and again by misguided choices in men. Until I, you know, got wise, that was another phase of my healing where I figured out I had to completely renounce all of it in order to change my pattern. So in my work, I teach a lot about romantic stuff. In this book, I don't lean heavily on romantic relationships. It's not excluded particularly, but this is about our general capacity to connect. And ultimately, a romantic relationship is a friendship.
Yep.
It's a friendship where there's a special kind of attraction that binds you together in a certain way. But being a friend and having a friend is rocket science to a lot of us. And we're running around going through the motions of it and getting hurt again and again and not knowing why. And so I volunteered to figure it out and I wrote it all down. This is a self-help book that walks you through how to do it, how to come out of isolation. So isolation, you know, the hidden ways we isolate. Some people are overt isolators and they will say right out, I don't like people. I live in a cabin with a dog. I work remotely. I'm not dealing with you people. So that's one way to deal with it. But a lot of us are going through the motions of connecting and covertly we're not. We're looking at our phones every time we're at dinner. We commit to participate in some volunteer activity and we back out at the last minute, or we take the smallest thing. I sort of call out, I throw a lot of potlucks and I threw this in the book. So if any of my potluck guests read this, don't let it hurt your feelings, but take it as a hint. I go, you go to potlucks, but you bring something completely undersized considering the occasion and your income. You know, I understand if somebody who's a student has to bring a bag of chips. I understand that. But you know, if you're like a doctor, I would say bring something a little more substantial. Everybody
that
else
has to be one of the most subtlest forms of covert avoidance that I've ever
heard. Avoidance. Yeah, it comes from, and I know because I did it. I did it for years.
Somebody's cringing right now.
I know, but I was like a divorced mom and I played that card every chance I got in my mind. You know, I'd be like, I'm a divorced mom. How could I be expected to bring a side salad?
You know? Bring like two Oreos.
Yeah, no. No, sometimes, you know, there's, I'll tell you, a crowd pleaser, a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, everybody will scoff and say it's not cool enough, but they'll eat it all up first at the potluck. So hot tip from Anna. But, you know, it costs $30 or whatever. And so it's an appropriate level thing if you're going to bring a few people to a potluck, you know, kind of like carry your weight. The book isn't all about money and comparing yourself, but I just use that. There's these subtle ways we do it. We cop out. We just don't see ourselves as accountable. Coming to things late. I was 5 minutes late to meet you, right? So if that's a pattern, that's a little pattern of avoidance. There's this t-shirt and nobody wants to wear it except for real jerks, I think, but it's true. I'm sorry I was late. I didn't want to be here. You know? I was reading something on Twitter and I couldn't, that's it. I got distracted by what I was reading. I didn't leave enough time. I had to get my lip stain on, which was very tricky, and I had to be late. That's the honest truth. But what do? We go in and we go, oh, sorry, there was traffic, or oh, sorry, I had stomach flu, or my grandma died. These patterns, it's like in any one situation, it's understandable that you would want to bullshit people. But what you're actually doing is you're just completely like blocking any kind of genuine connection. And, you know, trying to put this version of yourself forward that's acceptable to other people, and then just kind of running around behind the scenes, you know, not feeling like that person, not feeling like you can present yourself. And it's tricky because this is not the same as saying, oh, you just, like, I really believe healing involves finding our agency, becoming our full and real selves. but you can't cut immediately to being your full and real self when you have nasty habits of lashing out at people every time you feel triggered, or you can't control your urge to run away from people, you know, in the middle of something. Like you drive together to a, you know, to a camping trip and you get annoyed with them and you leave them there. You know, some of the things that I've encountered in my life or done, and, you know, these habits are not okay. It's not okay to do that to somebody. And so just being yourself isn't enough. It's a combination of character development and being yourself. And when you have cleared up a lot of your errors and mistakes, your head comes up, you feel safer to say how you really feel, but it takes a lot of practice. It's really good to have friends who are also working the same sort of, you know, project with you of trying to be more connectable as well. And then to have some tools that make sense and not just platitudes from people who don't have what we have, who are like, oh, just go to social things that people do. And it's like, got it. You know, it's more than that. It's about how to actually show up and not have this like false self there that's designed to protect you from the stress and dysregulation of being around people. So ultimately, you got to learn to re-regulate. And until you can do that, you kind of have to avoid people because they're just so triggering. That's the trouble. So that's what we've sort of been teaching ourselves to do, is to manage our stress and dysregulation by pulling back, holding everything at arm's length, not making commitments, but then wondering, like, why do I feel so alone? How come everybody else is like pairing off and I just don't even understand how that happened?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like when you're talking about the like running away from conflict, or just our ability to have conflict in general, or all of these things. Like I know that you're big on the regulation stuff and nervous system, but like where do you place the importance of getting an understanding of the experiences and dynamics that we grew up in that, you know, kind of helped form a lot of these faulty beliefs that we hold about people and our ability to relate with others?
Well, that's everything, really.
You know, like how conflict was handled in your family, yeah. You know, all of those things.
Yeah. I kind of frame it around 8 obstacles. So it starts with, you know, if you have a dysregulated nervous system, you're having trouble managing. And then there's this connection wound, which is partly neurological. Like if you were neglected in the early years, you may have had like a developmental delay in the neurological structures that make connection possible, that make intuition and reading the room and sort of understanding nonverbal communication. A lot of us had a developmental delay on that. And I'm optimistically saying it's a delay. I don't want to ever assume that these difficulties are permanent damage, but at least some of it, we don't have a perfect little, you know, scanner, we can go, oh, it's 33% what you were born with. It's 40% your neurological injury from being neglected. And the rest of it is social. Most dysfunctional families, you get all of it. Mm-hmm. You get some mix of all of it. So you come at it just assuming, well, let's find the stuff that I can actually change. So that would be the behavioral stuff. So the obstacles, you could really list many of them, but I gave it a lot of thought. And I'm like, I really wanted to like give a manual. There's a chapter on each of these. And it's like, first of all, avoidant behavior. We love to talk about how other people are avoidant, but if we're always dating avoidant people, guess who's avoidant, right? And then if you can recognize that in yourself, you're just like, ah, you know, it's not always a conscious decision. So what's unconscious has to come up through practice, not just talking about it, but like practicing not being avoidant. And so for me, being married has been quite the PhD level study in how to kind of hang in there when things feel rough, when I feel criticized or abandoned, or, you know, and hang in there and not lash out, not just run away, not just say something flippant. Like, obviously, you just don't care about me. And to just like hang in there. And there's not always a lot to say. There's not always a lot to change. But just to be able to, you know, live through those next couple of hours when you're not getting what you thought you needed and find out that you can be just fine. You can use your tools, as they call it in therapy, you're resourced, you know, to go ahead and survive that. So avoidance, feeling like you belong. There's like, this is what I discovered from going on YouTube 8 years ago. I thought I thought that having trauma was this one set of problems, but something that really emerged in the comments every time I talked about not feeling like I belong, when I would mention that, I thought I was talking about a unique quirk of my personality. Oh, the thing about me, I never belong anywhere. Well, it turns out like everybody traumatized, I hardly have met any exceptions, feels like, yeah, I have some sort of difficulty with that. In groups, I feel stressed out. I try to be part of a group, but it ends up feeling really uncomfortable. I feel judged. I feel like I can't deal. I want to get out, or I want to. And so I noticed in myself, and I invited people to give me their number, but like when you join a group, do you tend to have a distance from the center of the group that you always go to? For me, it was about 80% out. I would try to go in, but I'd always end up 80% out or all the way out. And people had like, do you have a number for that? Like how far out from center you tend to sit in groups?
You know, it's so interesting. I'm somebody that would more so be in the center. And mm-hmm. I've noticed that as I heal more, I feel less of a need to do that.
Interesting. So you have variation in how far you can go.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like usually, I don't want to say like center of attention, but like feeling like I need to be connecting with everyone, like at a party or, and now I can kind of sit on the sidelines and just kind of observe. Uh-huh. But that's one thing I was going to bring up is like how when we heal our trauma, like when we heal from this stuff, it does make us more connectable. But in certain ways, you know, it makes us like less connectable to like when we have no desire for these sort of surface level interactions anymore, you know?
Yeah, no more.
So I'll find myself kind of avoidant in situations where the interaction is not fulfilling to me.
But I mean, are we talking about avoidance and isolation, or are we talking about healthy solitude and boundaries? You know, a boundary is just like, yeah, well, for shallow conversations, I'm not really all in for that. I keep my time available for something that I prefer. And that's like beautiful healing. That's fantastic. Because you can easily, that's definitely like, there was a whole phase of my trauma, you know, life where I would just fill up all my time. And then I was constantly complaining how much I didn't like my companions. And I couldn't believe how they weren't aware of anything going on and stuff that I read about all the time. And I was just like, what's wrong with them? It's like, well, I chose them, you know, like they haven't done anything wrong. So starting to be more discerning and trusting that you can afford to let go of friendships that don't serve you. I have a whole chapter on how to release mean and troubled people from your life. I'm not the only traumatized person who had a life just like bursting at the seams with mean people and troubled people. Mean people, I kept trying to like make them come around and like me. And troubled people, you know, the addicts and the people who, you know, had serious money problems or temper problems where what was I even doing there? But I they were all I had, you know, I was just grateful to have people at all. And I misunderstood what the process was to come up out of that and start connecting with people who felt compatible to me and positive and constructive for me. And it was that involved a period of loneliness.
That hit me when I was reading the covert avoidance stuff is for me, you know, I don't have as much like in-person connection, like fulfilling relationships with people that live around me as I would like. And I feel like I am kind of in that in-between period where you let certain people go to make space for people to come in. But what I do notice about myself and like one of the characteristics, it's a little bit different, but I wrote it down where it was like overestimating how dangerous the world is, which causes you to avoid leaving the house. For me, it's making this automatic assumption that the people that I'm wanting to connect with, they're not out there. So then that causes me to isolate where like I need to be taking more of the action to find these people and bring them into my life.
Yeah. That's, you know, I love having a YouTube channel because people like engage with a video I make about a topic and then they tell me what they think about it. And then I get this huge sample of what do traumatized people think? How do they think? And I can really see this thing where people who are on a solid path of healing, they are able to positively estimate the potential out there, you know, and then people who can't. So in the example of dating, And I just tell people, like, part of my dating course, it's a whole module, like, to get the trauma-driven thinking. And there are these trauma-driven beliefs that people have,
There's
like,
nobody out
no
there.
good men out there, all just net, fill in the blanks. And there's the corresponding thing for women, too. And it's a very, like, wrong-headed thing that reflects on the person who believes that. It's not attractive. It's going to actually work against you should you meet somebody you like. If it's leaking out of your views, you know, that's it's a big red flag if somebody's like, I don't know, you seem like a nice woman, but the rest of them are just craven money grabbing hoes, you know, like you would sort of be like, whoa, maybe not you. And so it works against you. And the trauma driven beliefs, they run deep. You can get a lot of validation for them online. There's certainly in the comments and on Reddit and things like that, but even there's a lot of like content creators who cater to those trauma-driven beliefs, you know, about how terrible men are or how terrible women are or how, you know, you must never this, you must always that. And so you have to be very wise about the content you absorb, the people in your content you absorb. Like one of the things I had to do to stop being so negative about relationships, because I'd had this string of really terrible experiences, and I basically leaked it on everything. I was trying to go on dates, but I was just like leaking, like, no, you know? It was just a mess. The mess kept leaking, and I had to like clean off my playlists on my then iPod. What was it?
Your iPod, yeah.
Yeah, my iPod, and it was all full of the sad, angry, heartbreak, you know, ain't it awful songs. And I had to just
All
like
men suck.
set them aside. There's these certain artists who specialize in that, like Martha Wainwright or Exile in Guyville, I think is like the anthemic album, you know, of like men suck so much. And it's funny because I was telling my sons, I go, yeah, no, I used to be very anti-man when I didn't understand why I kept having a negative experience with them. And they were like, what? And I played them a song from, what's her name? Exile in Guyville. Liz Phair. Liz Phair is her name. It's from the early 90s, from the year I had the worst heartbreak ever. And it'll just tell you everything you want to hear about how awful they are. And there's a time when you got to get past all of that if you want to have something good. It's not healthy to be coming at it. So anyway, I showed it to my kids and they were just like, oh, that's awful. And they're my boys, they're my sons. And I'm like, I know, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But I didn't know how to be, to assume sovereignty and responsibility over the experiences I was having. So I hear the same thing in the comments when people are very traumatized and they're driven by trauma-driven thinking. They're like, I see this too. These are comments. They tend to come in the early morning because the thoughts are happening at night for people. They go, people are just shit. You know, they're all selfish. They're all narcissists. All they want is this. They don't care about anybody. And that's a really
I
bad place to
see.
be.
Yeah, it's dark.
And I used to try to argue with them, but I don't anymore because they can be quite vicious when they're in that place. And I either delete the comments just because they're very discouraging for the majority of people who have come to the channel because they're trying to get some help. Or I just leave them alone and I don't respond. And most people will just leave them alone. But people are lovely. You know, the more I heal, the more I am just delighted to discover like people are amazing. And yeah, there's some ones who are very lost and harmful, and I don't have to hang out
Wounded.
wounded. I don't have to hang out with them. I'm not the one who's always going to say that all trauma is just wounds. You know, some people are like, I believe good and evil are real things. I believe each of us is in a personal battle of good and evil to try to strengthen our good aspect to overcome the evil aspect. We're all capable of being rotten to each other. And, you know, in my trauma, I wandered down that path way too far, and I'm so grateful to have come back from it and to be able to be an influence on people to like t play an active role and quit. It's like, yeah, I was really traumatized by my parents. It wasn't my fault at all, but at a certain point, I had to be focused on like, what am I doing? What am I doing? How am I treating people? And it can't always reference the story of what they did to me. Sometimes it has to reference like, I didn't learn how to have proper manners with people, but I can teach myself. I have a thing called YouTube. I have books. And that's the right thing to do, is to teach yourself how to be a good person and then to hang out with people who you believe are good people. and which you'll get wrong in the beginning, you know, but you keep, you know, you can keep evolving who you hang around. And so I always have some mentors in my life who I admire a great deal. And I try to be honest with them about my personal struggles and say, what do I do here? And I don't always get the easy answer or the answer I want about it. And that's, I'm at a place where I don't want to waste my time on earth, you know, continuing to repeat my yucky mistakes. I'm trying to make the most of this.
So shit shows, the pressure to make the most of the final months of the year is absolutely real. If you woke up today thinking of all the things you should be doing, please stop shooting on yourself. You're doing the best that you can. And when the shoulds pile up for me, Calm is a tool that I reach for to release stress and find space to breathe even on my busiest days. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, and it's here to help you feel better with guided meditations, sleep meditations, grounding exercises like breath work, and expert-led talks. The Calm app puts the tools you need right in your pocket, so stress and anxiety relief is always within reach. So calm your mind and change your life. Calm has an exclusive offer just for listeners of our show. Get 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/adultchild. This is an amazing value. Go to calm.com/adultchild for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library, calm.com/adultchild, and tell Calm you heard about them from me. All right, shit shows, did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common nutritional gaps? It affects 1 in 3 adults, and especially women. It often shows up as fatigue, brain fog, weakness, brittle nails, but the problem is that most people don't realize that low iron may be the cause of these issues. That's why I'm here to tell you about Siderol from Pharma Nutra. This is a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while also avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea, constipation, and all that fun stuff. It is clinically proven to be comparable to IV iron and is formulated with just 2 ingredients, iron and vitamin C. It's vegan, allergen-free, gluten-free. You can take it anytime, anywhere. So if you are that 1 out of 3 with an iron deficiency, head to pharmanutra-us.com and use code ADULTCHILD for 10% off your first order. That is pharmanutra-us.com. Promo code ADULTCHILD for 10% off today. The countdown is on, shit shows. Holiday shopping season is officially here, and Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't find anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast, and now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Good looks for products that are high-quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind. Let me tell you about something that I recently found for a friend of mine. It is a birth month gemstone and flower candle. So she is also a January birthday like me. So it's garnet and the smell is carnation, flowers, herbs, crystals, and essential oils all coming together in this really beautiful candle. And as I've said before, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms to dads to kids and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. I mean it. So don't wait. Cross those damn names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/adultchild. That's uncommongoods.com/adultchild for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
What was the most difficult, like, behavior that you had that pushed people away, that was either the most difficult for you to finally see or for you to overcome?
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. And it's not gone yet. It still shows up sometimes. It's better, but I'm going to be just totally honest about it, because that helps me make progress on it.
And that's what we do here.
Yeah. When I'm angry, I can be really sharp. I can be overly hard on people. And I dare say vicious, you know, in the past, just I lash out. It's emotional dysregulation. And at this point in my life, I don't really have an excuse. It's just something I have to, you know, I know what it is. I can teach people how to manage it. Sometimes it still happens. And it's totally on me to be aware that I'm getting emotionally dysregulated and I'm lashing out. And it's like so hard to admit, but when I'm emotionally dysregulated, I have a certain numbness to it and a certain, like, self-righteous rationalization that's operating in my mind with it. It's like, how can I help but be angry at you and be hard on you? You've made me feel this way.
Well, is it you going into fight mode?
Yeah, it's fight mode. It's fight mode. I feel overwhelmed by things sometimes. So I have a team that works for me. And, you know, they've all seen that side of me before. And it requires that I be very honest and work on it to continue to have good relationships. It's really like nowhere near what it used to be. But I hate it when I realize I've done it again. And when it's happening, I can't feel it. Mm-hmm. But what I notice is I can see in other people's eyes, they look a little bit like that, like taken aback at me and as if I'm acting out of character. And that's, you just have to use the cues that you've got. The trouble with trauma is it like deactivates some of your conscious mind. And so but you work with what you still have online in these moments of dysregulation. So I find working with people and running a company, especially when it gets really busy, I find it really dysregulating.
Of course.
Yeah. And do you have that? Like,
it's, yeah, of course.
Success comes with it. A learning curve to learn how to handle, like juggling a lot of stuff, dealing with criticism, failure, you know, stuff that doesn't land right. Somebody lets you down. Somebody was supposed to get something ready for me and they didn't. And so my trauma symptoms will just start activating on that. And it's on me. It's on me to handle that. And it's funny because one of my mentors called me out. I said, I wake up at 3 a.m. and I feel I can't. And I said, I can't sleep. And he said, why? And I said, because I know that like God wants me to like try to reach the whole world with this. And I'm being lazy and I got to try harder. Mm. He said, God never asks you to like not sleep. It's okay. There's no like band of, you know, marauders coming in right now. You don't have to get up. You're supposed to sleep. That's what's ordained for you at night, is get your sleep. And that was like this huge thing. And he told me that what I was experiencing was perfectionism. And I was like, no, that's like those perfect girls. I'm so far from perfect. But it was like perfectionism of thinking like, I don't get to have the luxury of things like sleep or proper food, or, you know, I'll sort of put myself through hardship to do my work. And that's not right either. So I'm 62 years old. And I'm like, really? I don't have to do that? And I'm like, but what about the world? And he's like, because I'm a person who believes in God. So, and this mentor is a spiritual mentor to me. And he's like, either you trust God, like to work with you, you know, even though you have a mortal body that has to sleep, you know,
exactly,
or you don't trust it. And you're going to grab the bulls by the horn and try to do it your way and get your results. And I'm like, so I'm kind of learning. I had a period of burnout last year where I published 2 books. My stepdad died. I just a whole ton of stuff going on where I live. There was all this drama with crime and I got to be too much for me. And I was trying to stay on my treadmill the whole time and keep it going. And my body just said, I'm tired. I can't do this. And so this year's lesson is about how to find the way to bring my best work out and bring my best relationships out and not try to like
run yourself into the ground.
Run myself into the ground as if I'm some other kind of human that doesn't really need normal things.
Yeah. Like rest.
Yeah. I had to buy myself like protein drinks because I would just eat like, you know, carbs all day. I know better, but I was so tired. I was trying to like get fuel by any means, and it doesn't. Anyway, we've all done it.
Yeah. Burnout is something we can all relate to.
You get very tired eating carbs all day.
It doesn't. I want to talk to you about, because I feel like this is something that we don't talk about in relation to adult relationships, more so when it comes to the way we were raised being attunement. You know, we talk about lack of attunement with our parents, but I don't think I've really, before reading the book, I don't really know if I've ever heard somebody talk about how we have an inability to attune with others. So I was hoping that you could explain that because I think that that's really powerful.
Well, I'm sure others have studied this. I haven't found a lot of stuff on
it. I've never seen it.
It's what I've experienced. And I've always related a bit to people on the autism spectrum, even though I'm fairly certain I don't have that, because of this feeling of like not being able to read where people are coming from emotionally very easily all the time. and not being able to read the room, where I walk into a room where everybody's very upset about something and I'm cracking jokes and everybody has to sort of give me a look. So that's what it used to be like. Interestingly, I've become very, very good at it now. I'm so tickled with myself. You know, I actually, instead of just becoming okay at something that was hard for me before, I've developed excellence in it. And it competes, of course, with emotional dysregulation, which shuts it down. But it's through years and years of kind of facing the noise in my head through my daily practice techniques, the writing and the meditation, that I have less noise in my head, or I know how to have less noise in my head. It gets there, and then I know what to do to have less noise in my head, and I can be perceptive. I think perception is really underrated. I had my perception quite messed with as a kid when, you know, they were lying about how dangerous things were, or how drunk my mom was or something. My perception was really messed with, and they would call me a worry wart when I was scared. And, you know, there were like bad people in the house. And I wasn't a worry wart, but it used to manifest as all this stuff. So I learned to shut down my red flag detector. That's a problem. But I became a grown-ass woman, and I had to turn it back on. My mom was dead. Nobody was going to like fix that for me anymore. And I had to learn to read the signs better and just pay more attention. And so attunement is both being able to read danger, but also read someone's intentions. So another thing I used to read, I would overestimate, is like if a guy was interested in me, I would think that what he was feeling was that I was the one, or that he was in love with me. And that's not necessarily what you're reading in a guy that you don't know very well, who's like, I like you. I've got that face, you know, I want to spend time with you. You don't know yet where he's coming from. So you have to hang out. You have to have conversations. I love going slow with that kind of thing. That was the hardest thing for me to read. And then people used to like stab me in the back. I've been making a series of videos lately about like female bullying and aggression. And I've been on the receiving end of that a lot in my life, and I could never see it coming. And nowadays it doesn't happen anymore. And I think it's because you have to have a certain kind of like lack of attunement to have somebody bully you and to read it as, I better act nice. And I think we often attribute that to people pleasing, but I also think there's something else going on. There's a weird kind of neurological glitch going on where I can't see it. I don't realize you're being hostile. You're being threatening to me. Nice is not what I do right now. Boundary is what I do right now. Say no is what I do right now. And so something that's helped me to have unusual insights and allow myself to come to my own realizations about what's been going on and how to repair it in my life is that I question all those assumptions. I think there's a neurological thing going on that dims our perception at critical moments. And so we find ourselves the very sort of situation that stresses us out. If that was what you grew up with, then that happens and your brain kind of, you know, there's actually like a dimming of activity in the left front cortex when you go under stress like that. And there's a certain kind of stress that a re-triggering event has, and it shuts down a lot of your reasoning.
What about this quote? I wrote this down because I really liked it. You said, I became aware that I held an old belief that emotionally normal people were either against me or about to discard me.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Oh.
How would that show up?
Well, the evidence was all over the wall that they were against me or about to discard me, but it.
Like, what would trigger that? Like, what?
Emotional dysregulation.
No, I mean, like, in their actions. Why would you perceive that?
Just because it had happened so many times, I no longer trusted that people being friendly to me was reliable. Way of suddenly turning on me. Also, the types of friends that I made, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they weren't very reliable friends. This book opens 18 years after my first book, Re-Regulated, starts, you know, in 1994, when I almost took my own life, when therapy wasn't helping me. This one opens 18 years later, when I knew how to regulate, even though I didn't have the word for it, but I just didn't have close friends. And I was in and out of the hospital for 4 years. And boy, when you're a single mom, you can no longer hold down a job because you're in and out of the hospital so much. It wasn't my fault. I had had a surgery that had an error, and it just snowballed. And it got worse and worse. And I was sometimes in the hospital for as long as a month. I had to go to the emergency room 44 times. I was either bleeding out or had a septic infection. It was very serious. And I didn't have help to speak of. And I just reached a point of despair. I dated a guy who turned out to be not a good person to date, and he died of an overdose. And that blew up my life to where I was like, what is a girl like me doing in a life like this? I didn't have friends, like people, I didn't have people to like comfort me through that or help me with the kids. And I think I had to have so many surgeries because without help, my kids were like car seat age, and I'd have to just like lift them into their car seats. And I wasn't supposed to do that. I just had surgery, but what was I going to do? And I just didn't have help. And so I tried one more time to go to therapy after that guy died. And I'll cut to the chase. I had PTSD. She didn't diagnose it. I was there for a year and a half and I didn't get better. I don't put that in the book, but I'm going to tell you. I had PTSD. And eventually, when I had EMDR and started running, I overcame that PTSD, and that's where my fairy work really kicked into high gear. But at that time, I went to this therapist, and my lament was, I'm all alone. I don't have anybody, you know, and I can barely keep it together here. I have to keep paying the mortgage and putting food on the table and paying for our health insurance and this therapy. And I just can't, I can't handle it. Nobody is helping me. And she helped me. This is one very sensible thing she said. She's like, well, normally that's a sister, a mom, or a best friend, and you don't have that. So, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to have to make friends. And I was just like, yeah, but people are so shitty. They're so selfish. But I think we have a way of, you know, it's really hard to make quality friends when you're not in a quality place. That's the like double-edged sword of the whole thing, or the catch 22. It's so hard to make that happen when you're in a bad place. When you're in a lot of trauma, of course you're self-centered. And the only people who want to be your friend are self-centered too, you know. That's like, and so there's this deep growth sometimes that we're each called to do when we're going through those dark nights of the soul, that we have to do the growth even though nobody is giving it to us. And help was available to me. You know, therapy did not turn out to be the thing that helped so much, but I sought out mentorship. Like I knew people in my life who I knew were formidable and wise, and I was always scared to be, I was acquainted with them. Like one person was somebody who had been in my 12-step universe for years and who knew me, and it was a man, and I needed a male perspective. When I first met my husband, I had been single for a long time. I had been avoiding trouble and working on myself a long time, but I didn't want to blow it. And I was like, "You're a man. Can you help me like not fuck this up again?" You know? And he said, "Yeah." And I was like, "'Cause you've seen me make mistakes all these years." And he was like, "I have." And we were never involved. And he was a safe guy for me. And he just taught me a couple things about how to correct the mistakes I was making. And it took so much courage for me to ask him. I used to be so
Was
afraid.
that in relation to, were you asking him specifically for dating?
Yeah, for dating.
Dating? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
Do you remember like what some of those things were?
yes, I do. And I put so many of them with his blessings in my dating course. So one is you have to go slow. You have to go slow. Other people can have casual sex, but if you have an attachment wound and you tend to just like, you know, completely lose yourself the minute you sleep with somebody, you can't do that. You got to wait. And if they don't like it, they're not a good person for you. The reality of you is you're a person who's sensitive in this way. You need to get to know somebody first. So this is so radical. And when I met my husband, he's the only person I dated after I changed my mind about how I was going to do all of this. And I was like, I'm going to go slow. He had just already made up his mind about the same thing for himself. He wasn't nearly as effed up as I was. You know, he was much more normal, but nonetheless, he was divorced and he had a couple of relationships that the way they turned out, he was like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I want to have only the good thing. So we were both people who only wanted the good thing, but I weirded him out when he first was
Yeah, and
dating
then he
me.
broke up with you, right?
He broke up with me for 6 months. And so that's when I asked this guy to help me.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you were at, you said that you had asked your husband.
Asked my husband to tell me how to date.
Yes, I thought like you guys started dating, like months, like years, like a year prior that you had asked him. Okay.
Oh, no.
Okay. And I was like, oh, I don't remember this part of the story.
No, it's a grateful to this guy. He was so awesome. But he was known as like a tough sponsor for the men he sponsored. Very tough. And I, you know, when you want to have shenanigans, you don't go for a tough sponsor. You go for the easy one. You go for the one who's not going to make you call or be honest or actually come through. And, you know, there's a break and a gas pedal in every form of healing, you know? And so when I
First, what did your husband tell you was the reason why he broke up with you?
Well, at the time he said, this just isn't going to work. He withdrew. I could feel him withdrawing. And then he just said, this isn't going to work. And it was not his philosophy to tell me much in detail. But now that I'm married to him, I'm like, what was it? And he's just like, you were coming on so strong. You were so certain that everything had to happen fast. And this was going to be a slow decision for me. I didn't know you yet. You had kids, you know, you had all this drama in your past. You know, I just like, I had a different pace and you wouldn't let me know. You know, I was like, wow, that's good to know. But anyway, I didn't know, but my male friend who gave me some mentorship, he was very generous with his time. And I was like, be straight with me. And he's like, you got to sit on your hands. You always pursue aggressively. I'm like, but if I don't, nobody will like me. And he's like, you don't know that. But that was my trauma-driven belief. I have to make this all happen. Nobody's going to approach me. And my sort of aggressiveness and being very, you know, trying to make everything go, it was, some guys were okay with it, but they weren't the kind of guys that I actually am drawn to. I like really strong men. I like strong men who follow their own lights, you know, who march to their own drum. And so they weren't attractive to me if they would sort of put up with me. And that was the irony. I couldn't. Pretty subtle stuff, isn't it? It's a dance, this is what I believe. And I did a Substack post about this that really got me some anger from the manosphere, but I don't care. It's just true. My mentor told me, like, you need to let them do the work in the early part. They need to show you that they're attracted. They need to ask you out, and they need to pay for those early dates, or at least one of them, you know, because what this is it's a way that we show each other where we're coming from.
Yep.
And every relationship I'd had before ended up being with somebody who was either emotionally or financially dependent on me. Or if it was any kind of, you know, substantive relationship, and it wasn't a relationship of equals. Given that I had kids, I needed a guy who could demonstrate that he was willing to do that. He was willing to share. He was willing to shoulder the burden. I wanted somebody who was going to, you know, be, it's a big ask to ask somebody to be a step parent. I wasn't going to get married again unless it was somebody who really could love my kids too. And play a secondary role in fathering them because they have a dad, you know, my ex. And so I knew that was a big ask. And so it's a certain kind of challenging and special role that's super important to children if you're going to do this. Honestly, like, I don't know if it's always a great idea to bring a step parent into kids' lives. Like, it's got to be really, really good, or it shouldn't be done. And so I had this really tall criteria. So it was illogical for me to push the relationship along, given the stakes, given what happens to me if I attach, you know, too quickly. So yeah, he broke up with me. And 6 months later, he started dating me again after I started following my friend's advice to not initiate anything. I would see him in this class we were taking. We were taking a class together. So I'd see him every week. And yes, I would get all dolled up.
Of course.
Think for hours about how I was going to look, but then I wouldn't go try to start a conversation with him or anything. I would just leave it to him. And it wasn't long before he would always go try to chat with me, or he'd bring me a cup of coffee or something. And then eventually, you know, he sort of came around. He needed a lot of room to do that.
Were you kind of consumed with it? Like, honestly, were you a little obsessive?
Oh, yeah. Honestly, yeah. I was totally consumed with it. I was I really was crazy about him. I just thought he was like the best guy I'd ever met. And I felt, and it may have been true, like if I let him get away, it would be a regret for the rest of my life. And so I did my best. I did my best, and slowly it worked out. Now I know about him, like he's an introvert. He's very slow to make his mind up about people or to get very close to them. And like, I didn't know any of that going into it. I just made him into like the love object. And, you know, I want the relationship to be here by this date. Like, it's so not about that. It's about two people who have really different like rhythms and thoughts. And it takes time and it takes attunement to see. This is where attunement is so crucial. And we've all been objectified by somebody else, or they come up with no attunement. When you can really pay attention to somebody, you can get to know them, and you can also find out, like, are there red flags or what's beautiful about them? You can see what's lovable and unique about them. And that's really what everybody wants. You want to be seen and known for the unique, special person that you are, and to have people be present with that. I think that's probably the saddest thing in relationships, is when you don't get that.
Yeah, we just want to feel seen.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, especially if you grew up like never feeling seen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you get really good at tolerating not getting it. And I think like sexual attraction can carry you a long way, or just like the desire to have somebody in your life to hang out with can carry you a long way. But in the end, the relationship is going to fall apart if you're not really like witnesses to each other, if you don't understand what this person's vulnerabilities are, what's amazing about them, if you're not there just sort of reflecting back at them, I think you're great, you know, it's this, like, if you can't authentically do that, the relationship just, it falls apart every time. So that's been a beautiful thing. And I learned it by connecting with all kinds of people. So this is the fruit. Like, marriage is great. In one sense, it's the top of the pyramid. It's the most important person. But it's also been like the petri dish where I learned how to pay attention to other people. Mm-hmm. And then my friendships blossom now. It's so fun. And I can't even believe how full the world is of people I would love to be friends with and how little time there is to meet them, you know?
Well, I really love just like to close it out, as far as like your definition of connectability, just being like learning how to be your true self so that you can attract, you know, find your people, because, you know, I think that we have this idea of like connectability means like that I'm finally like lovable, you know, like kind of being a misguided assumption there, as opposed to like, no, it's actually getting to learn how to live like as who I really am.
Yeah. As who you really are, considerate of others, who others really are too. Like that's, I think both of those get robbed from us in early trauma. And so we have to figure out how to build it up ourselves. And I don't think there's a lot of great, there is great wisdom out there. And honestly, a lot of where I learned it was reading philosophy and theology, like old stuff. They've always known this stuff. Mm-hmm. You could read, you know, Marcus Aurelius or George Washington, or, you know, there's very good wisdom about how to get your life together. And then there's really bad wisdom out there about how to do it. You have to be discerning. So they're ultimately, it's an act of personal agency to decide to make these changes and stop blaming other people for them at a point. That's not to say it's never our fault that we were abused as kids, but it's totally on us to try to make this go differently. And I think the real goal of healing, it's like, I thought it was just like, can I just feel better, not be so depressed, and then maybe have a boyfriend? I had so many, you know, I got that one again and again, but the real goal is to become your real self so that you can start to bring your gifts to bear on the world. Mm. And that's, the older I get, the more I can see where, you know, gosh, isn't somebody going to do something? Like where I live, there's garbage all over the freeway. I had just come home from London, and London's got its problems, but they don't have garbage all over the freeway. And here in Northern California, it's just covered with garbage. Like nobody picks it up anymore or something. And I said to my husband, I just don't even think I can do anything about this. Who do you call? Who's responsible for this? And it's sort of a wider problem here where we live, where you just throw up your hands and decide to pick your battles. But you can't treat your trouble connecting with people like garbage on the freeway that maybe is somebody else's job. It's just got to come from within. And not everybody's ready for that. That's why they call me Tough Love Fairy. I'm like, are you ready? Do you have the spine? Do you have the cojones? Do you have the courage to face, you know, what you're doing that's getting in the way? And then I can help you.
When you started healing, do you feel like you had any idea who you were?
I thought I did. I think when I was a kid, I did know who I was, actually. And then I lost it along the way. I had a lot of, like, I don't know. Survival will do that to you, I guess.
Sure will.
Yeah. But I think the one of the things I've come to appreciate later now with more healing and more freedom to be myself is what a great kid I was. I was a great kid. I was a lovely little kid, very curious and spiritual and friendly. And, you know, I'm just getting more and more like I was originally, you know? So, yeah. I know who I am. Yeah. And I'm the weirdo who's like, I have no inner child. I just don't even understand that. I'm
I
just
know
like,
you are.
just
I know
me,
you are.
you
I
know?
know.
Yeah.
I know. So when does the book come out?
It comes out October 7th, and you can pre-order it now. And if you do, I give you a free course on feeling happier. I give you free workshops on that nobody else gets to come to except for pre-order people. The whole system when you is it's rigged. It's a rigged system. Like when you pre-order, you make it so on October 7th, all the sales process and Amazon goes, oh, she sold thousands of books. It's
Like
not an
until the
ordinary
first day.
day.
Yeah.
So anybody thinking about the book, do it now. It
They
helps.
will. They'll get it. Everyone
Yep.
that my audience loves you. You're a
Oh, thank
fave. So
you.
they,
Thank
yeah.
you. So
They'll
great to
get the book.
talk with
Don't
you.
worry.
We
Yeah.
always have such good chats.
Just let it all go. What's making you slow now? Just let it go.